Everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, live from Baltimore. It's 9:39 a.m., which you know what that means. Good morning, Baltimore! That's a hairspray song.
That is anyway. Just too jaunty for 9:39 a.m.
And it's
although I do love that song so much. Nikki Blonsky is amazing.
It is a great song. So Sondra's up at 9:40 a.m., which is a thing that's happening in the world. And do you know what?
It's not a thing I like.
I'm proud of you, because usually you complain so much about it. And you only complained a little bit this morning, which I think is progress.
See, I'm really trying my best. I am trying my best to do what I can. Honestly, Good Morning Baltimore just made me feel a little bit better. And now I want to watch Hairspray. But like, I'd rather go back to bed after this. So I think that's going to be my plan.
Probably. But we're in Baltimore today. Is the beginning of StarCast. I'm going to be doing the Inside the Roads show with Brandy, Cody and Dustin. So that's going to be really fun. We're going to get some interviews with people. Tomorrow's Full Gear. I am very excited about that show tomorrow night. I think it's going to be a belter of a show. But should we
honestly, after watching AEW this week, I'm kind of excited for Full Gear, and I'm kind of hoping that, like, because I'm going to be at a birthday party tomorrow night, and like, I'm guessing we're going to have it on the TV. And like, when Rio versus Emi Sakura happens, I'm probably going to be like, guys, I need to watch this match.
Yes. And then probably Cody and Jericho.
Cody and Jericho too. Like, I'm so excited for that match.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess, first of all, we should talk about the ratings. The ratings came in for this week's episodes of NXT and AEW. AEW got 820,000 viewers, which is a dip. And NXT got 813,000 viewers, which was a gain. I know you don't really care about ratings. I guess all I would say is I think it is a slight... arc for AEW that their ratings have dropped a little bit, but at the same time, you know, I think the win for them, I guess, would be that WWE put NXT all over on SmackDown and still didn't get above them. So I feel like there's wins for both. Like, NXT have got their best number since week what? No, the first 2 weeks, because they were over 1 million, I think, for the first 2 weeks before AEW went head to head with them.
But well, I think it shows that they do share an audience too, which is interesting.
Yes, because if you're looking at the kind of 100,000, 150,000 that are watching NXT this week, were they watching AEW the other weeks? And did NXT do enough to make those people who sort of like crossed the line, old Impact term, TNA crossed the line,
understand that reference.
Did they do enough to make them stay? So that will be kind of fascinating to see how that pans out. What show do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about AEW first. It's interesting because I don't get to watch either show live, but this week I actually was like, I really want to watch NXT first because I don't want spoilers for it. And I didn't care as much about AEW. And I feel like that might be the prevailing sentiment given how the ratings shook out. So I just think it's interesting. Like, after seeing the, you know, Raw and SmackDown Invasion, well, I didn't watch Raw, so I don't, like, I know-ish what happened there. But, like, after seeing SmackDown, I was like, yeah, NXT, like, who's going to show up on NXT? And it was interesting.
But yeah, I mean, this was AEW's go-home show for their pay-per-view, and this was NXT's fallout from their kind of, I mean, you said you couldn't really give them much better press and have them all over SmackDown and Raw.
Right.
So, yeah, so let's talk about AEW first. They're in Charlotte, North Carolina. I've got to say, the crowd for AEW were brilliant. They were really on top form for this show.
Yeah.
So we kicked off the show with Pac versus Trent, and they went about 14 minutes. Pac ended up getting the win. There's different points where, like, Orange Cassidy tried to do his shtick, and Pac just, like, killed him. and then they were brawling on the outside and all this different stuff. But in the end, of course, Pac, he did the Black Arrow, and then Trent kicked out of it, which was pretty shocking. But then he put the Brutalizer submission in, and Trent passed out. So
I mean, did Trent kick out? Did he kick out really?
Yeah, I was watching it on a plane, and I was kind of like, did he kick out? Like, because I think what happened was he was supposed to kick.
He was supposed to kick out. I'm sure that that's what was supposed to happen, but I did not see him kick out. Like,
also, it's weird to like if the Black Arrow is your finish, like, to not that I'm saying Trent is not a good wrestler, but like to have your finish be kicked out by a mid-card tag team wrestler seemed a bit of an odd choice.
It was strange, but I mean, he hasn't really been using the Black Arrow as his finish, though, has he? Because he's been finishing people with his submission.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, the whole thing was weird. Like, I mean, I thought the match was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. I thought Trent got some really good near falls, too. But the finish was very strange, and it reminded me of when, like, Becky Lynch didn't kick out and Emma pinned her, like, by accident, and that happened. And like, I don't know who the fault is on, if it was like Trent was supposed to kick out or like Bryce knew what the finish was supposed to be and was like, no, it was a two count. I totally saw his shoulder up, even though it wasn't up. People were referencing the time on NXT when Eva Marie forgot to kick out too, and the ref kind of did the same thing. So like, I don't know, the finish was really wonky, and it just seems strange, like, to not count it if Pac was supposed to win anyway, but I don't know, whatever. I love Brace, like, stuff happens. But yeah, like, I thought the match was brilliant, though. I really enjoyed it.
It was a really fun opener. And then next we had Cody's announcement. The announcement was that he is not going to, if he doesn't beat Jericho at the pay-per-view, then he's never going to have an AEW title shot again. He talked a lot about being management and also being talent. And, he talked about being Jericho calling him an entitled millennial bitch. But talks about, you know, Jericho was had a very similar silver spoon by being the son of a successful hockey player. And Jericho said that at Full Gear, he would bring the best of his generation, eat him alive. A lot of people loved this promo, because before I'd even seen the show, people were just like, this Cody promo was amazing. What did you think of the promo, and how did it do to sort of intensify the Cody-Jericho feud, if any?
I think it's well worth everyone's adulation. Like, I think this promo was incredible. I think it is the best promo that I've ever heard Cody cut. It's one of the best promos I've heard in a very long time. I mean, people are putting it up there with, like, Hard Times. They're putting it up there with a pipe bomb from CM Punk. They're putting it up there with a lot of really great promos throughout history. And I think it belongs there, honestly. Like, I think Cody came across as so genuine. He got tears in his eyes when he mentioned Dusty Rhodes. And, like, mentioning other people who've been in management and who have been in the title scene, and, you know, talking about how much that meant to him, I thought was incredible. And then to point out that, you know, Jericho talks about Cody being born with a silver spoon in his mouth, right? And he's like, oh yeah, it must have been so difficult growing up as an upper class son of a famous hockey player. I forget the line, but like something about the same silver spoon, you know, like he's like, we have the same silver spoon. And then like talking about how Jericho's called him a millennial bitch, and he's just like, no, like, I'm not a millennial bitch. Like, I'm sorry. Like, my generation is here to kind of like take over, basically. I don't know. Like, I can't remember the wording of the promo, and he cut it a lot better than I could even try to replicate it here. But I thought he was incredible, and I thought the emotion behind it was just fantastic. And for him to say that he is not going to challenge for the AEW title again if he loses to Chris Jericho, that seems like a really weighty stipulation. Because, like, in a lot of companies, I would say, oh, well, that just means that Cody's winning, right? Like, that just means that he has to win. And it's just telegraphing it, and it's too intense, and da-da-da-da-da. But, like, in this case, I don't know. Like, it puts doubt in my mind, because I think, like, before the stipulation, I was like, I'm pretty sure Chris Jericho's going to win, and that's going to be fine. But now Cody has to win it, right? Like, this is a new company, and he's running it. And for him to never have another title shot, like, I don't believe he would put that stipulation out there without making it stick for a while, right? Like, I feel like I believe in this a little more than when I see a McMahon fired, because that never tends to stick very much. But I feel like Cody wouldn't want to put that out there and then just make it mean nothing. I don't know. Like, I'm intrigued. I'm so intrigued. Like, I really want to watch Cody versus Jericho, and I really fucking want Cody to win. Like, really, really badly. There's no universe that I can even imagine where I would be cheering for Chris Jericho, even in the most, like, objective brain situation if I try to look at it logically. Like, I just fucking want Cody to win, man.
We watched the promo on the plane, and it was amazing. And it's like,
I teared up.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And I think that, like, anyone who questions how he's not a great babyface here is, because I think what also works about Cody and what he's doing, and I've noticed this in a lot of places, whether it's like even our Facebook community or a lot of other places, there are a lot of people who are WWE fans who are actually angry that AEW is doing well. It angers them that there are people who were not, like, who are making it now that didn't make it there. And I think there's a lot of people, whether it's like David McCutcheon, who doesn't watch WWE anymore, or different people who are on my timelines on Twitter or stuff, who are like, we wanted something different, and this is different. And this is what we've wanted for years and years and years. So I think that, I'm in a lucky spot where I'm a fan of both. So, like, mm-hmm. I'm, you know, kind of like you, like, we're the lucky ones, right? Because we get to enjoy it all. We don't really
I just like the wrestling.
Yeah, but we don't have to, like, be like, whereas I think there are some people who kind of go, how can anybody think that AEW is better than NXT or better than whatever? And it's like, but it's different. They're different things. And I think what Cody and the crew have kind of done is they've taken advantage of the fact that there are a lot of wrestling fans, hundreds of thousands of them, as we're seeing now, who want something different. They don't want McMahon wrestling anymore, or they're sick of it, or they're sick of WWE, you know, not delivering on what it is that they were going to do. So Cody almost feels like the face of that. And what's kind of genius about it is that Jericho's almost the face of WWE. Like, Jericho's almost like the Hogan that mm-hmm. jumped ship to WCW. Like, you know, Jericho is the established main event, WrestleMania winning, scarf wearing, bubbly drinking legend. And Cody's the guy. Whereas Cody's like, I am here for all the people who, you know, that company did not. I mean, I'm maybe setting up my own narrative here, but I feel it's part of what you can look into with the story, is that Cody's like, you know, fuck you. This is not happening because of you. This is happening in spite of you. You know, you're here and you're part of it, but it's not because of you. And then with the match, what I think makes it work is you've got the three judges. Who are they going to be? Is it going to go to a 60-minute draw or not? Are the Inner Circle going to get involved? Is Cody going to lose and not be able to be champion? Is MJF going to get involved? Like, there's so many questions, and I don't think it's obvious what they're going to do.
It's not obvious at all, and I'm so excited. And I mean, I don't think you're reading into the narrative there at all, because Cody did mention that he went from undesirable to undeniable, right? Like, this is the place where he's become undeniable, and he's like, no, like, I finally blossomed, like, I finally flourished. I finally found a place where I can be me and be the fullest version of me, and, like, fuck you for trying to take that away from me, and fuck you for trying to say that you're better than me because you're not. Like, I don't know, bringing up the parallels of his life with Chris Jericho's life, the whole thing was so good.
And I do think that Cody Jericho, to me, is the best built wrestling main event of this year. And I don't even know if I can pick one in the last couple of years that I think is even as close to it, because I just can't think of one where I go, right, okay, where can I find a babyface that I think is... Because I think he is a good baby. I think Cody's a great babyface. I
think he's a great babyface in this place. I don't think it would work everywhere. But I think in this moment, like, yeah, 100%, he's a great babyface.
So I don't know when the last time was that we had, you know, a badass babyface who everybody wants to see kick the shit out of this prick heel. Like, it's just, it works really well. So I think
Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa?
Yeah, but I would say that one, for me, was probably a slightly smaller scale than this. Like, this feels more like a big revolution thing that's happening to me. And this one's more for me. Like, this one, because it's going to be more shenanigans based. It's going to be more like, it's the story hits with me more for this one. I can't say why, it just does. But you know, on a main pay-per-view, I can't remember the last time we had a match of this level. I can't think of one off the top of my head. Even like Becky, Ronda, Charlotte, which we were all super into, I mean, we all try and kind of forget about the fact that match wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. Like, we try and, because we want it to be that big moment that it was. So yeah, I think the promo was brilliant, and it really feeds into the main event. We also had Private Party beating Dark Order, so it's going to be Private Party, Dark Order, sorry, Private Party, SCU, and the Lucha Brothers at Full Gear in a match. So that should
Why
be
do they
fun.
Have medals?
I don't know. I think because they're like, I don't know, I have no idea. I should know the answer to this. It was the third place medals. Because they were third place in the tournament.
Oh,
that was
okay.
What it was. Wait, I don't know if that's an official thing. Oh no, yeah, no. That's what, yeah. This match. Sorry,
it was four medals, wasn't it?
Yeah,
there were medals being held up, and they said third, and I didn't understand why.
So these two teams were the two teams who lost in the semifinals. So they were the third and fourth teams. So this match was for a third place medal. And a place in the tag match at Full Gear. So Private Party won, becoming the third place in the tournament. The fact that I'm having to explain it all probably doesn't mean that it worked very well, but...
All seemed a bit convoluted. I was very tired when I watched this, which probably didn't help. But I thought the match was really fun. I liked it a lot.
However, Sondra, none of this matters, because up next was the greatest video package of all time.
Brilliant.
I don't know if Chris's aunt or Soul Train Jones, I don't know who was
No,
more
it
my
wasn't
favorite.
His aunt, Kenny. It was his aunt's friend from church.
What was her name? Like Bobski?
It was like Patrice
Bobski or
Bobski? Yeah. Like Patricia Bobski, I think was her name.
I can't wait for little Chris to kick the shit out of Cody.
Wasn't he Clint Bobski? Wasn't he Clint Bobski in Southpaw?
Yeah, I think he was. I think it's a whole throwback.
It's a whole thing. Like, but no, Patricia Bobski, his aunt's friend from church, and then Soul Train Jones talking about how his talent is like the breadsticks at Olive Garden. It's unlimited.
I don't like, there's him kissing Sammy, him doing the bubbly in the bath. There's him saying that
he's wearing his pants and his scarf in the bath.
There's him saying that the only thing he needs to worry about on November 9th is where to get the bubbly. Where to get good bubbly. Jake Hager says nothing in the whole video.
They keep focusing on him and he just stands there. And it, like, his title or whatever was The Big Hurt. Like, Jake Hager.
It's so good.
And, like, The Big Hurt Inner Circle. What was it? I think it was Santana. His, like, little caption was
The
Ruffian.
The Ruffian. The Inner Circle. So good. Oh my god. It was just... And
all the details were there. It is disgusting how good he is at his job.
But I think, you know, to Jericho's point, and he said this before in interviews, like, I think that that's the reason why, again, I'm not trying to be like an AEW fanboy here. I'm just trying to like get both sides. I think part of the reason for people who are very pro-WWE and don't get why people are so into AEW, I think it's stuff like this where like wrestlers are kind of able to do their own creative stuff. And they're able to, you know, get their own stuff over. I mean, we've seen
Yeah, because this had Jericho written all over it. Like, this was totally his deal.
Yeah, and we've even seen it in WWE when like, The Miz gets to do his own stuff. The Miz is brilliant when he gets to kind of be... Like, nobody knows who The Miz character is better than him.
Of course.
So when he gets to do that, I think when you let characters have a say in it, then they kind of... It feels more authentic. So,
well, I mean, like what Bray Wyatt's done with Firefly Funhouse, I would say is the same thing. Like, you
exactly,
can tell that
yeah.
he is all over that because he knows his character.
Yeah, it's like Wyatt is like what, you know, the renaissance of the year. Like this was a phenomenal video package. The idea that he got Virgil like was just so great. Like it was just perfect.
It was incredible. And like just talking about what a legend Chris Jericho is, like Virgil, the authority on legends.
You mean Soul Train Jones?
Soul Train Jones.
Wrestling legend, Soul Train Jones.
I believe
Jones.
His caption was legend.
I mean, I'm buying it. We also had a tag match with Riho.
And you know what the brilliant part is about the video package?
Mm-hmm.
I still want to see him get beat so badly.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I hate him. Like, it just makes me hate him more. Like, he's so brilliant, but I'm like, fuck you for being so brilliant, and fuck you and Cody should win. Like, you're such a prick. You're such a prick that you wear your trousers in the bath.
We got a tag match with Riho and Shanna against Emi Sakura and Jamie Hayter. We won't spend too much time on it. It was okay. I think this showed what AEW are kind of suffering from with the women's division, and that there's not really a big star yet, so it's not really clicking as well. But you know, I don't know. What did you make of it? Because I know that you've had some criticisms about the AEW women's division.
Yeah, the women's division's not really clicking for me, and it's a bummer because I really want it to. But I think that they're starting to make strides. Like, I think putting Rio out there and making her a character more and more and more is good, because, like, normally I'm not a fan of, like, oh, these opponents are going to face before they face, right? Like, that's something I've been very critical of WWE doing, like, putting people in tag matches. But the little bit that I got to see of Rio versus Emi Sakura in this was, like, oh, I really do quite want to see this match. Thank you very much. Like, I'm an Emi Sakura fan. Like, I think she's amazing. She's one of the few people, like, in the AEW women's division that I've seen before. Like, because I've seen some of her stuff just, like, from Pro Wrestling Eve and other places. And I think she's incredible, and I want to see more of her. So it made me want to see Emi Sakura versus Rio a lot more. And then, like, Emi Sakura getting the pin on Rio, I thought was really interesting, because, like, they were calling, because I think she got it with, like, kind of a crucifix roll-up situation. And it wasn't, like, an upset, because obviously, like, she's great. Like, she's phenomenal. She's world-renowned. But her pinning the champion was very interesting. So it was like, oh, it's the standard trope that I normally criticize in WWE, so I have to, like, point it out here, but it worked for me in this context, I guess. So I think that when it's not overused, and when you don't see someone do it, like, all the time, like, oh, the challenger has pinned the champion, then it kind of worked, I guess. I was into it.
We also had a promo, I can't remember what it was, so I'll just mention it here. We had a promo where Brandy and Awesome Kong were talking about how they're basically going to come and cut some people up. I was into
it. I'm here for Evil Brandy. Oh my gosh. Whatever devil has possessed her, Awesome Kong is apparently the devil who's possessed her. I love it. I thought this promo was great.
Yeah, it was good fun. And then we also had on the show, we had a video package for Moxley and Omega, and I liked the video package, but we needed a Kenny Omega promo, and we didn't get it. And I think it takes away a little bit, because I think that Moxley got to do a really good promo. We needed one from Omega. We needed him to sell how big a match it is for him, and it just doesn't feel like he did that, and that for me is a bit of a misstep.
I kind of keep forgetting about Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley, which is weird because I really like both of them, but, like, the two matches that I'm really looking forward to on the show, I guess, are Emi Sakura and Rio and Cody and Jericho, and the rest of it, like, I was really excited for Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley when it was supposed to happen at, was that at where was that supposed to happen?
All Out.
At All Out, right. So I was really looking forward to that, and it ended up being Kenny Omega Pac, which, like, was also amazing. I don't know. Like, I'm not as gripped by this story, I suppose, and I don't really know why, because I think Jon Moxley's been great in building it, but...
Well, I mean, you've not really heard Kenny Omega's motivations in it.
Not really, no. I mean, like, well, Kenny Omega did say something... Wasn't there something in the video package about, like, Jon Moxley bringing him back? Like, he's at his best when he's forced to be, like, when he has something to fight for. And that's fine, but it seemed like just kind of generic motivation. Like, I was kind of into the story of Kenny Omega hasn't won a bunch, and I really liked when he had to face Joey Janela on Dark to, like, earn their way back to the main show, right? Because Kenny Omega has not won a bunch, so he was not on the show. And I think that's the story. Like, it's supposed to be Kenny Omega's redemption, but I just don't know that they've been getting that across as clear as they could have.
I think the match will be good, but yeah, I think it could have packed a, as Finn Martin would say, it could have packed a little bit more of a punch.
Could. And it's another, like, lights out unsanctioned situation, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually, as we are recording this, I'm looking at my hotel room window, and it is the Royal Farms Arena, just, like, right across the road. So it's pretty weird. Main event time is Hangman Page and Kenny Omega and Sammy Guevara and Chris Jericho. I think that one of the tropes that this is kind of like a big tag match, which I know frustrates some people. I kind of like them because, like, I mean, I'm used to watching the Attitude Era. Really, we got this kind of stuff fairly regularly. So it worked for me. And the post-match brawl, it was a little bit WCW, but I don't mean that as a negative. I mean, WCW in the sense of, like, I mean, I know you weren't watching, but, like, there would be these moments in 1997 where the NWO were, like, on fire, and they were the big heel faction, Hogan Hall and Nash and all that. You know, they'd be, like, they'd have the baby faces down, they'd be spray painting and whatever, and then, like, Sting would come down from the rafters, and the Giant would come down, and it was chaos. But you kind of got into the chaos because all the motivations made sense before they, like, turned the Giant, like, for the 15th time. So, like, for me, when they were doing all the stuff at the end, and you've got everybody brawling and stuff, I knew where everybody's motivation was, so it worked for me. I'm curious that I know that shenanigans sometimes work pretty well for you, but other times don't. How did this one shape up?
It was fine. I thought the tag match was pretty fun, and I thought the shenanigans toward the end, and I forget who got the pin on who.
Jericho hit the pin on someone. Jericho hit the Judas effect on Hangman Page after Pac low blowed him on the apron.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, because I remember there being shenanigans and a low blow and stuff happened, and that was fine. Like, obviously the Inner Circle are dicks, so it makes sense that they would be dicks here, and get assistance from another dickhead. So. Yeah, like, that was fine. The brawl at the end was just kind of like, okay, it's another brawl. Like, I feel like I've seen a bunch of brawls lately. But I knew where everybody stood, and, like, it made sense. Excuse me, my voice is still bad because I'm still sick. But yeah, like, it was fine. It just wasn't, like, my favorite part of the show, I guess.
It worked really well for me. I think that it's, as time goes on, then, you know, it's weird because, like, I mean, we watch Retro Raw. I kind of like a lot of the chaos, and a lot of that is kind of similar chaos, just with, like, rotating players. So,
and I tend to be like, all right, another brawl. That's cool.
Yeah. What is, like, but
like, I'm not down on it. It's just, it's fine.
I feel like that's how I feel about, like, a great wrestling match. I'll go, yeah, it was a good match. And now that's how you feel about a brawl. Like, it's our opposite.
And I'm like, but they did so much stuff. It was amazing. It was my favorite.
Yeah. And that's how I am with these brawls. So I'm like, it's chaos. People are going crazy. So I guess as long as the motivations all keep making sense, then I think they'll be fine. Where would your thumb be for this episode of AEW?
It was thumbs up. I thought it was a great episode. I mean, the only thing that, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of anything that, like, wasn't good on the show. And I think everything was pretty good. Like, Jamie Hayter and what's the other girl's name? Shanna,
yeah.
Like, I think Portugal's
premier athlete.
Right. Like, I just kind of wanted to see Rio versus Emi Sakura, and they were just kind of there, but...
Oh, by the way, I forgot. Portugal's premier athlete from France.
All right, then.
That's it. She's from France. But okay. She's Portugal's premier athlete.
People can move to places, I suppose. It's fine.
You've not seen this. Like, seeing it in the mid-2000s, Vince went through a phase where he wanted all Canadian wrestlers to be announced from where they live. So it was like, from Tampa, Florida, Chris Jericho.
Why?
He had look. You watch the show. You know that he sometimes just has an inkling. So
whatever.
So let's thumbs up the episode for me as well. NXT was on head to head as always. Mauro Ranallo opens the show, checking in with the. Attack that the OC, AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Karl Anderson had laid out the Undisputed Era outside of Full Sail. The OC walk out at Full Sail. There's Bullet Club chants. Styles cuts a promo, but, you know, the Undisputed Era tried to bring the war to Raw, and now they're returning the favour. And then this brings it to Tommaso Ciampa. There's a Big Daddy's Home chant. And it all basically leads to Keith Lee and Matt Riddle coming out and setting up a main event match with the OC against Lee, Riddle, and Ciampa. I'm glad that they did some form of retaliation of, you know, somebody coming to NXT, given that they did SmackDown Raw. How did you feel about the OC as the picks of the people to come over to Full Sail in Orlando?
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And you know why? Because AJ Styles and Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson were never in NXT. And there are very few people on the roster currently who were never in NXT. So they had to pick someone who Full Sail wasn't going to have hometown feelings for. Like, you can't send Shinsuke Nakamura. You can't send Sami Zayn. You can't send Kevin Owens. You can't send most people. Like, you could have sent Randy Orton, I suppose. I would have booed him. But I think the OC are really, like, if you wanted a tag team, they're really the only pick. Because who else do you send? Like, everybody else has come through NXT and come through that developmental system, but not them. Like, they debuted on Raw or on pay-per-view or whatever. Like, AJ Styles debuted at the Royal Rumble, whatever. Like, they never came through NXT as a system, so they're the perfect pick to send back there if you want Full Sail to be on side with NXT, and they were. Like, I mean, we'll talk about the main event in a minute, but Full Sail was obviously not going to, like, want these interlopers here. And when AJ Styles was like, so this is NXT, he can say that because he wasn't there before. So, like, are they the biggest names? Are they the champions, right? Well, are they champions of anything right now? I don't think they are.
No, they're not.
Okay, like, I genuinely wasn't sure. But I don't know. Like, I think they were a really good pick. And I thought the main event match was a lot of fun, too. So, I don't know. Like, how did you feel about it being them? I feel like I probably thought it was better than a lot of people, because a lot of people are like, oh, it's the OC. Like, I mean, like, I can't be bothered with the club either. Like, I think that they've just been annoying most of the time. But I really like them as performers. And I think them being in NXT, they just felt like villains.
I mean, I think it's definitely the hottest thing that the OC have done so far in their run as the OC. I mean, that's not like the highest praise in the world, because they've been quite
it's a low
dull,
bar, but low yes. Bar.
But no, I'd never thought about that, but there's a very good point about the idea that it wasn't people who are coming, but it's not like it's Owens and Zayn or something where, like, they're going to get massive reactions. It's people who've never been there before, and they were clever to make sure that the first person that they interacted with, you know, after they laid out the Undisputed Era was Tommaso Ciampa, because he's popular in Full Sail right now. So they made a good decision with that. I thought it was a hot angle to open the show.
And it kind of shows knowing your audience, which is not something that we can say for WWE main roster a whole lot of the time.
Yes. So it was. I mean, I had a fear that they weren't going to have any retaliation. So I think it was really good they did have some. And it was a hot open. Yeah, it was better than I envisioned the opening to NXT being. So you can't really grumble. It was a good use of the OC. I think they picked Riddle and Ciampa are good guys. Putting Lee in there as well is good, because it puts him in there with some big stars. Well, a big star in AJ Styles. Mm-hmm. The club. So yeah, it was a good open. And then we had Pete Dunne and Damian Priest, who had a match where Pete Dunne managed to get his win over Damian Priest. It was a pretty great match for 10 minutes. And then Killian Dane attacked after the match. And Killian Dane basically showed that he is a big bad bastard. But then before he could leave, Damian Priest attacked him for obviously attacking him before. And Killian Dane ended up giving Priest like a cannonball on the steel steps. So Killian Dane stands tall over the two of them. Even though it was like a 50-50 thing of Pete Dunne getting his win back, I think the Killian Dane insertion made it a little bit more interesting.
It did. And I mean, I thought the match was great too. Like, I really enjoyed it. So I don't know if I'm huge on Pete Dunne doing like the finger breaking thing before he does all of his stuff. Like, I really like it when he bends fingers and like does small digit manipulation and all that kind of stuff. But like the breaking fingers thing seems a little hokey. I don't know. Like, it's weird. It's a nitpick. But I mean, the two of them work together really well. And I'm intrigued by Killian Dane just attacking dudes. Like, I like him as a big bad motherfucker who's like, I have a lot of hair and I will kill you.
I mean, Damian Priest is someone who is getting a little bit more interesting via being in a program with Pete Dunne and Killian Dane. So That's a good sign.
Yeah, it's making me more interested in Damian Priest, because I don't really know anything about him from before. So, like, him doing really good wrestling is helpful.
It is helpful. We also had... one of the big stories was they announced on the show that Shayna Baszler... The women's war game match was going to be Shayna Baszler, Bianca Belair, and Io Shirai against Rhea Ripley, Cancer Rae, and Tegan Knox in the women's war games. But then each team gets to pick one more pick for the match. And obviously, the whole story was that Dakota Kai does not get picked. Because, you know, and God bless her. God bless Dakota Kai.
Because she loses to Shayna Baszler.
Yeah, but she doesn't get picked. And I felt like with that, are we aiming toward... Because I also saw a little .com video with her, or one of the platforms. Are we heading towards a Dakota Kai heel turn, do you think?
I almost feel like we might be, which would be a bummer at this point because I really like Dakota Kai and Tegan Knox as a team. Like, I think that they are great. But Dakota Kai did seem really upset. I mean, first of all, I love Dakota Kai versus Shayna Baszler. I thought this match was great. It was a far cry from Tanara and Santana Garrett before it, which was not very good, bless their hearts. But like Dakota Kai versus Shayna Baszler, I thought was really good. And it was nice to see a fiery Dakota. It was nice to see her like fired up, and like she gave an interview beforehand that this is not the same Dakota Kai, and she's ready, and she's totally gonna face Shayna Baszler, and she's gonna take it to her. And she wasn't that timid Dakota Kai that we saw before, right? Like, she almost seemed to have like, I don't know, like trauma related to Shayna Baszler before when we saw her, and it seems like she's overcome that, and it was really cool to see. But she still came up short, and I felt for her. Like, I felt really bad for her. Like, she gets out of the Karafuda clutch the first time, and you're just like, maybe she'll do it, maybe she'll do it, but of course she's not gonna do it, right? Like, of course she's gonna lose to Shayna Baszler. And when, you know, backstage Rhea Ripley's like, you know, sorry Dakota, like, you just didn't make the cut. Because Mia Yim came out afterwards and like beat everybody up, and Mia Yim got picked, right? Because she looked like a badass, and Rhea Ripley picks her instead of Dakota Kai, and Dakota looks upset, and she is reacting to this, and she's like, it's fine, I get it, like, I failed, I lost, and she's reacting to that. And I think Dakota Kai is a really interesting story, and she's something to watch. Like, I'm really intrigued by her right now.
Yeah, the Shayna and Dakota Kai match was really good. Again, because like, you didn't really think that Dakota Kai had a chance to beat her, but she's so likable that you kind of want her to beat her.
And the emotion is there, right? Like, you're rooting for Dakota Kai, and Shayna Baszler's such a dick. And so, and the thing is, like, everything that happens on the show is logical, right? Like, it would have been easy to just put Dakota Kai as the fourth spot, like, because Tegan Knox is already on the team, so, like, it's her partner and everything. But Mia Yim coming in, looking like an absolute badass, beating people up with kendo sticks and whatnot, and, you know, trying to take retribution to Shayna, because she's had issues with her, obviously, in the past as well. And it's kind of like a callback to when Mia Yim was attacking all the horsewomen, like, individually, too. So, like, all of that makes sense. It makes Mia Yim more interesting. It makes me interested in where Dakota Kai is going to go next. And I think it's a pretty great War Games team. Like, I'm still not huge on the concept of War Games, but
I like that we're not, so the story also coming out of the show was we don't know who Shayna Baszler's last pick is going to be.
Isn't it Bianca?
No, because it's Bianca, Io, and Shayna. We still don't know who the fourth is.
Oh, right. Okay.
So we know it's Rhea, Candice, Tegan, and Mia Yim. Because Mia Yim, of course, after the match, Mia Yim ends up coming out after Dakota Kai has lost. Mia Yim comes out to kind of equalize with the kendo stick, clearing a different
ring. Because the horsewomen were, like, attacking Dakota.
Yeah. So, like, so the idea there is that you've got Mia Yim is kind of proven that she is a worthy person to have in your team. And I did kind of like the idea that Rhea, you know, when Rhea kind of says later on with Kathy Kelly that, like, you know, it's going to be Mia Yim, that, like, Dakota Kai is really disappointed. Rhea's like, you know, sorry, but, you know, Dakota's like, I understand, because you can't, who are you going to choose? The person that just lost, or are you going to choose the person that came out of a kendo stick and kick some ass? Like, you're obviously,
yeah, exactly. And like, that's the thing, is that she knows that she lost, and she knows that she didn't get the job done, and that's heartbreaking, because I think we've all, you know, tried things and failed, and you can empathize with that.
Elsewhere on the show, we had Santana Garrett taking on Tanara Conte, and then, you know, Tanara Conte ended up getting the win, a surprise win here. I mean, she's been used kind of as jobber fodder for the last
while. Was it a surprise win?
I mean, she's been losing every match that she's been in. So, I mean, maybe it's... I felt like Santana Garrett was, like, being brought in here, unless I don't know what's going on in the house shows. I thought this was, like, Santana Garrett's first match where she was going to, like, get a big win. That's what I thought was going. I thought, because Tanara Conte's just,
I just saw it as, like, the thing is that they called it Santana Garrett's NXT TV debut, and I guess that's, like, technically true because now they're on USA, but Santana Garrett's been on NXT before, and she's never very good because she's never, like, she's just not great. Like, I'm sure she's lovely, but she's just not, like, great at wrestling. And so it seems like Tanara Conte is, like, the star that they kind of want to get behind a little bit more. Like, she's not going to be in the title picture anytime soon. They're not going to Lacey Evans the situation. But, like, she's someone that they're building. And, like, this match wasn't great. and a lot of the timing was off and stuff. But I think Tenora like shows so much promise, and I love her, and I think she just oozes charisma. And I know that she's supposed to be like, I can't tell if she's supposed to be babyface or heel at this point, because they're talking about how she says that she's hotter than you, and she seems like she's supposed to be conceited, but she's also like really smiley and nice.
Yeah, I mean, I again, maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention. I just thought this was the idea of like Santana Garrett's debut, inverted commas, so she's gonna get a win because we've not really been taught that Tanara really means anything because she just kind of loses all of her matches. But now, yeah, I guess maybe now they're doing something with her, or I don't know. We'll see. This was just kind of blah. I'll be
Was
what
Santana Garrett signed to NXT even?
I think she is now.
Oh, okay.
Elsewhere on the show, we also had Tony Nese versus Angel Garza for the number one contendership to the Cruiserweight title. It'll be no surprise to anyone who is listening to this, who's listened to me over the years, that I was firmly supporting Angel Garza in his efforts here to bring charisma to the Cruiserweight division. And I really like Angel Garza's story. I like the vignette that they played, the video package they played for him. I like the idea of his character. Like I'm here for it. Tony Nese is dull is not even the word for Tony Nese. Very good wrestler, Sandra. Very good wrestler. I take
He
nothing
does have
away.
abs.
You know, and it's almost impressive to be in that good shape and be so dull. But he does manage it. But he is a very good wrestler. Ugh, I just wish it meant more.
I
But
like
luck.
him. I like him, but I like Angel Garza more. I loved this match. I thought it was great. I love the fact that Angel Garza teased the pants ripping off, and then like I think Tony Nese interrupted it or it didn't happen for whatever reason. And then Tony Nese, I think, went for like a was he going for a sunset flip or something off the top rope, and then he didn't get it because he like grabbed the pants, and then the pants came off, and that was like the big reveal. And Angel Garza's like, "Ha ha ha! I have foiled you."
Yes, it was a good match. It was a good
It was all
match.
a lot of fun. I enjoyed it a lot, and I think the right man won. Like, I think
Firm
we've
agree.
seen Tony Nese in title contention before. We've seen him as champion before, and I think they're really trying to start a new cruiserweight division. Like, I haven't gotten to watch 205 Live the past couple of weeks because I've been so busy. But like, I don't know. Like, they're moving in a different direction for sure. And Lio Rush versus Angel Garza is a fresh match, and I'm kind of excited about it.
They do the post-match thing where Garza is confronted by Lio Rush. Rush wants a handshake. Garza teases it but ends up giving him a slap. And Rush kind of smiles, I guess, because like that's showing chutzpah or something that like you know he's slapping him. This you know like you said, I mean they're trying to do something different. And I think what's good about this is that if you're an NXT viewer who did not watch 205 Live, or you're someone like me who doesn't really 205 Live was not my jam. I feel like putting Angel Garza and Lio Rush in this feels fresh enough that it doesn't feel like a 205 Live match. But I think it also would appease the people who do watch and enjoy 205 Live. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it works in all ways. Like 205 Live obviously is fighting kind of a losing battle at this point, which sucks because it's a great show. But yeah, I mean, like it's a different way to go, but I like the integration of NXT Cruiserweights being more like featured on 205 Live, and then 205 Live people being more featured on NXT. And I think they've made that a lot clearer that like they are under the same umbrella now. Like they've made that very clear.
That we've moved in. It's not just a drawer in the bedroom anymore. They're fully moved in.
Exactly.
They have their own cupboard. They have their own shelf in the cupboard.
Yes.
We get Dominik Dijakovic against Isaiah Swerve Scott. Dominik Dijakovic is a monster of a man, and really should have a mouthpiece because imagine what he could do with like a Heyman or something.
Well, it's crazy to me because he can talk. Like, he's so good. Like, I don't understand why they don't let him talk.
Yeah, I've
All
never
they
heard
want
him
him to say
talk.
is feast your eyes. But, like, he's good. He can talk. Let him talk. Let him be something other than Silent Monster Man because he's really charismatic and really great. So, I don't really understand why he's not talking. But he's great. I love Dominik Dijakovic. And I love Isaiah Swerve Scott. I thought that Isaiah Swerve Scott doing the whole feast your eyes, like taunting Dominik Dijakovic was great. They had I don't know, they have really good chemistry. They're great at wrestling. It's not a shock. Like, they're both so, so good and have been for years.
And I, you know, I mean, if they can give Dijakovic some mic time, maybe people like me who don't know him, or, you know, we can. I mean, it feels weird. Like in WWE, I feel like sometimes when you have like a bigger, like a big guy, they tend to do well in the WWE system when they are put in a team with a smaller guy. And then the smaller guy, it's the Shawn and Diesel effect that tends to be the most effective way. I mean, I'm open to new ways. Maybe if Dijakovic had something to talk about, like some sort of passionate story arc,
Well, because
then.
the only thing that they really have him talk about is that, like, he's from the Czech Republic and wants to win because, like, I don't know, family or something. But then he's also kind of a bad guy, question mark. Like, they don't seem to understand who he is. But once they figure out who he is, and if he can be something more than just feast your eyes, then he can be great. Like, he's so good.
He got the win here. We got a Forgotten Sons vignette, saying that we'll
I
never f
forgot.
saying that we'll
I
never forget
actually
them,
did.
and we forgot. I feel like if there was ever like if WWE bought AEW or AEW bought WWE one day, and you were like, you know, what dream matches would you want to see? You know, would you see Cody versus Triple H because they are the two like you know people who like love the fan adulation and do the fancy entrances? Forgotten Sons in the Dark Order would 100% be the match. Like what? Like it's so crystal. Anyway, Beth
I
advertises
hate that you're not entirely wrong. I love the Dark Order, but like, yeah.
for Beth advertises for next week. You're going to Io Shirai versus Mia Yim for the. I guess that'll be the go home show. No, it won't be. Will it be the go home show for? No, it won't be the go home show for Survivor Series. I'm talking rubbish. Io Shirai versus Mia Yim for next week, and then we're also going to get Lio Rush versus Angel Garza for the Cruiserweight title.
Here for it, both of them.
And then the main event is the OC taking on Tommaso Ciampa, Keith Lee, and Matt Riddle. Would it surprise you, Sandra, that this was a very, very good wrestling match?
I am actually not surprised that this was a very, very good wrestling match because you know why? These are all pretty great professional wrestlers. They understand what they do, and they do it well.
AJ Styles looked more motivated here than I've seen him in a long, long time. Like, you know, when he hit Riddle with a brainbuster, and then he's given him the forearm, he just felt more like energized. He felt like he had
He felt like
more.
AJ Styles again. Because that's one of the things that, like, I've been kind of wondering on the main roster, and I don't think I've actually said it, but like, I was starting to wonder if AJ Styles like couldn't go as well as he used to be able to. And I think that that's just pish because I think he was great here. But I think it's just like that main roster lack of motivation and like doing the same thing over and over and over is not helpful for anyone ever. And this felt new and it felt different. And even though like Matt Riddle and Keith Lee and Tommaso Ciampa feel very thrown together and don't really make sense as an alliance 100%. Like, I know that they're in war games, so they're gonna be together in that match. Like, I don't know. I don't know. It just worked. And because it was NXT versus Raw, and because Full Sail was so heavily on the side of NXT, as was I, like, even though the OC and AJ Styles, like, I guess they're all the OC now. I don't know. I just keep picturing teen drama. But, like, the OC are an established team, and like these guys are just kind of thrown together. But I'm still like, no, fuck you. Like, you're coming to NXT and you're stepping on, you know, our hallowed yellow ground, and you expect us to just roll over for you? No. Go back to the red place.
Go back to the red place, but the because the match was really good and it was you know AJ looked good but then we had the ref bump and everything was kind of breaking down, and then of course as like Ciampa's given was it Ciampa gave AJ Styles the knee and then he's going for his finish and then Finn Balor comes out,
How did I not see this coming?
and then it
Did
made
you
the
see it
most
coming?
no and then it made the most sense in the world when you saw it. You're like, how did I
Yeah.
not think of
Like
that?
his music hit, and I was like, of course. Of course Finn Balor would come out. Finn Balor, dickhead, who has turned on Full Sail, turned on our hearts, become a horrible, evil person. Of course he would side with the evil red baddies, right? Like, that sounded racist. I just meant in terms of Raw. But like, you know, of course he's gonna side with the club. Of course he is. And like when he came out and did he attack Ciampa?
Yeah,
Was
because
that?
he came out and then he attacked. He gave Ciampa the Pele kick. And then he attacked Matt Riddle. And then AJ does the two sweet sign, and Balor does his double shooter fingers, like the Bullet Club leader thing. Because Styles became the leader when Balor lit. But no,
I
when
think
it
Balor left and Styles became the leader,
Balor
right?
left and Styles became the leader. Yeah, and then Adam Cole saves Ciampa from the Styles Clash, and then we basically have, so it's a no contest, we have Adam Cole in the ring, Finn Balor on the ramp, and the show closes. This is a great ending to the show. This is, again, what I think you need to do. Like, I think that what NXT's been doing a good job of the last couple of weeks is, you like, it's no longer about just doing good wrestling matches. That's not what this is about. You can do that on a network show, but on, like, a big USA network show, you have to have big angles, and you have to have stuff that gets people talking, and this is exactly that. It was big, it was box office, it was, you know, callbacks to stuff. We're calling back to Balor and Styles doing something in another company. It didn't even happen in WWE.
And I mean, Moro said, like, it you know, reminds me of the land of the rising sun. Like, of course, like, they're referencing their history. And the thing is, like, Finn Balor and AJ Styles were never together in the Bullet Club, I don't think. Like, I'm
shoddy
with Bullet Club history, but I think I remember hearing AJ Styles talk about that they were never actually together. And so it's interesting, right? Like, it's interesting seeing Finn Balor in an alliance still with Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson, who were under him in the Bullet Club. But, like, I don't know. He's on side with them, but is there going to be a leadership struggle? Like, is Finn Balor versus AJ Styles ever going to be a thing? But not really, because they're on different brands. So it's just kind of enough of a tease without it going too far. Like, it's something you could tease for years if you wanted to, if you did it right.
But it was a really good sort of, like, shot back to the other side, you know, because, like, we were talking last week about the idea that two weeks ago where they did the angle where Cody went through the crowd and they had the brawl when Jericho was in the box and smashed his hand through and stuff.
Right.
And, like, well, that was such a hot angle. And now NXT are doing their own kind of angles that are getting people talking. So it's not just a case of people going, well, AEW did this angle. It's like, well, NXT did this one. And it's back and forth. And it ended up in the, I know that, well, for people who do care about ratings, AEW, like, you know, the last few weeks, AEW's, like, in the 18 to 34 demo been beating NXT, like, 2-1 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a lot closer this week. Like, this week it was, where is it? Let me just get the thing. AEW with 18 to 34s was only, like, 5% up.
Okay.
So for AEW in the 18 to 34 demo, their best bits were Cody's promo, Rio's match in the main event. For NXT, it was Shayna Baszler's match and the main event. But the key here is that more 18 to 34 people, so, like, to 18 to 49, sorry, AEW had 0.35 and NXT had 0.30. That's how close it was. Whereas most of the time AEW had been doubling NXT. Mm-hmm. So I think that the thing to kind of take away from that is that, like, people who are in our age group, 18-49, are starting to see NXT as a cool thing again in some ways, like, because the demos are showing it, the more people are checking it out. And I think,
yeah, that, and I mean, like, I think NXT was a worthy show of, like, maintaining that viewership too. Like, I loved it. I thought NXT was a great episode.
Yeah.
And I think, like, to your point, I know that, you know, like, they have to have big angles and they have to have big box office stuff, but I think that they're doing a really good job of mixing the two things. Like, they're also having really good wrestling matches. And so is AEW. Like, I'm not saying that they're not. Like, there's a bunch of good wrestling on Wednesday nights, and it's a lot to have to watch and work and do all of the things. But, like, it's a great problem to have because nothing's been bad.
No, it's Wednesday nights are great to watch wrestling. It's a good time. Mm-hmm. So that is basically it for us here on the main podcast. We're going to go over to the Overrun, talk a little bit of news, take some of your questions. But Sondra, give us some plugs and be sure during the YouTube one to really plug StarCast stuff.
Okay. You can follow me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. You can follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can hear the Overrun, including tons of bonus content. Like, not the Overrun, including bonus content. Patreon has tons of bonus content. It's still early in the morning. I apologize. Go to InsideTheRopes.co.uk/tickets for tickets to live events. Tickets are on sale for Kenny Omega and Mick Foley, I believe, currently.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
that's
correct.
Right. Okay. Just making sure. And youtube.com/InsideTheRopes is where you are going to see tons of content from StarCast this weekend. Loads of interviews are going to be going up, including probably, like, bonus clips from Fight TV, I assume, because that's before. And
we'll have a clip of Moxley talking later on. We'd sit down with JR. We'll have stuff from our Cody show. We're probably going to have some interviews from people people at Starcast. We'll have Scrum stuff tomorrow night from Full Gear. Lots
it
of
kind of
stuff.
Bums me out that I'm not there. I do love Starcast. Like,
it is the weirdest amalgamation of stuff.
It's always just bonkers and in the best possible way. Like, I love it. It's great. If you ever get a chance to go, you should go. Listeners.
And my goal this weekend is, if I don't get a photo with RoboCop, like, I'm gonna try my best. But like, I've got a performer pass. Can I get a RoboCop picture?
That's amazing.
Okay, well, thanks for listening, everybody. And here to play us out, who should play us out? Pick a theme.
Shayna Baszler.
Here's Shayna Baszler's theme, and we will be back next week with more. Go to Patreon. Here's Do the Overrun. Bye.
Bye.